This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at MOFAD.org.
I'm HRN's Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week, we're celebrating Valentine's Day. Whether it's your favorite day of the season or you avoid it like the plague, there's no debating it's a big day for the world of food and hospitality.
Valentine's Day is what we refer to in the industry as a blackout day.
I don't feel that my manlyhood is threatened when I order a glass of rosé or, God forbid, a rosé champagne.
It's an old Jamaican drink from way back, and we just decided to bring it back into existence. It's a drink that the men, they believe it really does wonders.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, folks, here it is. It's What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights. This is Katie Kiefer. I'm your host for today's episode, and we're going to be talking today with Samantha Levy, who is the New York State Policy Manager for the American Farmland Trust. She's actually in the studio today, which never happens.
I'm here.
No, it's so great. I almost always have to do my interviews on the phone because, frankly, it's really hard to convince people to come out here for 45 minutes, even with Roberta's as an
option.
Yeah,
you come in for pizza.
You'd be surprised at how many people cavil at the thought. But anyway, I don't blame them because it's the middle of their workday. Mm. So that's always a problem. So you guys sent me a press release, and it was really like, incredibly appreciated because, to be honest with you, while I was away, which I have been for the last month, I really hadn't focused on my show at all, although I have did a couple of broadcasts from Madrid, but I wasn't really thinking in terms of what I was going to do when I get back. So then I get this great press release from the American Farmland Trust announcing this wonderful new initiative called A New Generation New York.
Farmland for a New Generation New York.
Beautiful idea. Tell us about the American Farmland Trust for people who aren't familiar with your organization.
Sure.
And what you do there, and then we'll talk about the initiative.
Sure. Well, first, I want to thank you so much for having me.
Oh,
it is
my
pleasure to be here in the studio watching people eat their pizza.
I know.
So American Farmland Trust is a national farmland conservation organization. We're a nonprofit. Our mission is to save the land that sustains us.
Yeah.
And we've got a national office in D.C. and field offices around the country, New York being one of them.
Yep.
And so we basically take a holistic approach to our mission, protecting farmland, keeping farmers on the land, because you need the land and you need the people to work the land.
Right.
And then helping farmers adopt sound farming practices. And here in New York, we also work on building markets for farmers to sell into so that they're able to stay viable, have access to higher value markets, particularly farm to institution.
Yes. Oh, well, that's a great topic to discuss. We're going to get there.
Great.
So you guys just rolled out another sort of new initiative, although this is not really that new in the sense that you guys have been trying to keep farmers on their land as well as bringing new farmers into agriculture. And so as we have discussed on this show many times, one of the biggest barriers to new farmers is land acquisition or leasing land even. So talk about what this initiative is and how you're helping people.
Sure. Thanks. So this this program, Farmland for New Generation New York, is actually modeled off of a regional program that we've been coordinating along with our partners in the Hudson Valley and down into New York City for the last 4 years.
Right.
Called the Hudson Valley FarmLink Network.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
So it's the same model. It's a resource center, so a website with a land link, so farmers can put profiles up if they're looking for land. Landowners or retiring farmers can put a property up if they're looking for a farmer. And then a first point of contact on American Farmland Trust's staff for farmers or landowners who are looking for resources or more information or to help guide them to their next steps. Or, we're familiar with the people who are on the site. So often our staff will hear, property owner will come onto the site and they'll be like, you know, I actually know of a farmer who who's good for that. So
right.
It's really this human element, the people who know the people.
Yeah.
who I think that makes this kind of program more successful than a traditional land link that's like a Match.com. Sometimes we say that this is not Match.com for farmers. It's Match.com with a yenta. You know, it's the matchmaker who knows the parties and can bring them together.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So the other piece besides the resource center is the network of regional navigators, which is right. the press release that you
That's
got.
Right.
So it's in the Hudson Valley, it's been 16 partner organizations, including Grow NYC, Land Trusts, Cornell Cooperative Extension Offices, mm-hmm. all working together along with AFT one-on-one with farmers and landowners, you know, with their regional knowledge to help bring farmers onto the land.
Right, right. And I saw that when you sent me a piece of paper that explained sort of who was getting, there was $170,000 in play here.
Yes.
So who's getting that money and what they're going to do with that money. And it seems like what most of that money is about is really matching, not so much acquisition in the traditional sense, but matching leaseholders with lessees. And I that's kind of an interesting aspect of agriculture now that is, you know, makes it sort of more flexible in some ways and also is quite troubling in other ways. And I wondered if you could sort of talk about what those issues are and why.
Sure, sure. So, so now this program, which is statewide, which was part of this big announcement, we launched Farmland for New Generation New York in October of last year mm-hmm. In partnership with the state of New York. This is funded by the state of New York.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yeah, thanks to the governor and working with the legislature as well to include funding for this in the state budget. So your question was about the troubling issues with tenure, basically.
With owning land versus mm-hmm. leasing land.
Sure.
Yeah, because most young farmers cannot afford to buy land.
Yeah, it's really difficult. So I would say that our regional navigators who are working now statewide to bring farmers onto the land all across New York State, Long Island, North Country, Western yep. New York, Finger Lakes, Southern Tier, all over the state. They're working with farmers, helping them acquire land if they're able to purchase, but then, of course, also on leasing. And I'll point to one specific example. There's a land trust in the Hudson Valley called Columbia Land Conservancy,
uh-huh.
who's been working a lot on this issue of farmland affordability. They're thinking about, or they're using basically adding language to their easements when they protect farmland to ensure affordability and uh-huh. to make sure that that land, if it's protected, goes to another farmer. So this is why land trusts are an important piece of this equation, and that can enable a new farmer to buy a property.
Right.
But then they're also working, and a number of other organizations in the network are working on things like ground leases, so that farmers are able to lease for a longer period of time, maybe
right.
a 30-year ground lease rather than a 1 to 5 year lease.
Right, right. And, you know, that brings up the question, you know, when we talk about affordability of land, so when an older farmer wants to retire, he wants to maybe cash in. And that's a difficult thing to tell somebody, like, with the best heart in the world.
Yep.
You're retiring and, you know, you're going to want to get the dollars that you deserve for your agricultural land. And so,
sure.
So that's where, I mean, that's where the rubber really meets the road, I think, because it's so hard to balance the trying to keep the land in agriculture and yet making sure that those people who've been working in agriculture, which is such a hard job anyway, are getting the money that everybody else is able to get when
Absolutely.
They sell off a piece of land.
You're hitting the nail on the head
yeah.
as to why this is such a tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
And in New York State, 1 in 3 farmers are over the age of 65. To
right.
say nothing of the fact that only between 1% and 2% of our, you know, state residents are farming.
That's right.
So a large number will be retiring soon.
Yes.
And they are. Our research shows that they own or operate 2 million acres
wow.
of farmland in the state, and that's out of 7.3 million acres total.
Wow.
So that is
wow.
a significant
a very large percentage.
Number of acreage that's going to be changing hands within the next decade.
Right.
And to your question, this is why you know, Farmland for a New Generation New York is a program to really help farmers have access to the services that are going to enable them to find the right property, mm-hmm. an affordable property that has good access to markets, that has the right soil types, the right housing situation.
Right.
You know, because the regional navigators across the state, they know about the properties in their area. And
right.
that's why we believe this partnership approach is really the way to bring a new generation of farmers onto the land, work with retiring farms, farmers on succession planning. But the other piece of this is actually the Farmland Protection Program.
Uh-huh.
So since 1996, the state of New York's been investing in protecting farms basically forever from development.
Right.
That brings the price down for, you know, those who want to buy a protected piece of property because some of those rights are restricted.
Oh, right. So they can't then turn around and develop
exactly,
it in any way or build
exactly.
a resort, or they have to prove farm income to make.
Yeah. So I'll actually use an example here. There's a farm couple in Rensselaer County,
uh-huh.
which is sort of northern Hudson Valley, close to Albany, close to Troy. Zach and Annie Metzger, and they own Laughing Earth Farm. They moved here from Chicago looking for a farm property, and they came here. They worked a little bit, looked for the right property. They spoke with these farm owners of this property, and they said to them, you know, we really like this place. How much? We're interested in buying a farm. They told them the number, and Zach and Annie were like, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.
And but what was really excellent is they were connected with the Agricultural Stewardship Association, which mm-hmm. is a land trust that works in Washington and Rensselaer counties to protect farmland, to make sure that, you know, we've got a strong history of farming in those areas, that we're going to continue to be able to farm in those areas. They
right.
do excellent work. And they have a lot of experience protecting farms. And they were, you know, working with Zach and Annie as a part of the Hudson Valley FarmLink Network to help them find a property. And they said, let us talk to the farmers, talk to them about protecting their land. They were able to protect their farm.
Yeah.
And add an additional restriction called a preemptive purchase right, where basically now forever, this farm is going to be protected, and it's also going to always need to be sold to a farmer.
Right.
So the land trust, essentially what that means is the farmers who were selling the farm, they got some money to protect the farm.
So they were given an incentive to put their land into that program, is what you're saying. A financial
kind of.
Incentive.
I mean, they were paid for those rights to develop the property and the right to sell the farm to anybody but a farmer. And Zach and Annie, the buyers of that property, agreed. They thought this was something really important.
Yes.
They agreed to purchase the property under those conditions,
yeah.
knowing that they will be restricted when they sell the property to the next generation. It's going to need to be a farmer. And they thought that
right.
that was an admirable public good, basically,
right.
even though they know that they're going to be restricted when they sell it.
Right. So they won't be able to cash in with a developer and
exactly.
make millions of dollars.
Exactly.
Or should, God forbid, Cuomo change his mind on fracking or something like that.
yeah. But then the beauty of this program is that the farmers were able to retire and they got the payment for those development rights, and Zach and Annie were able to afford to purchase the property. So it sort of bridge that gap.
I see.
In the
okay.
middle.
Yes. Now I understand it. You know, I think Rhode Island, where I'm from, is kind of running a similar sort of, or they're searching for similar ways out of this very same conundrum, which is an aging farming population and how to preserve agricultural land. Because agriculture has become kind of a driver, an economic driver for Rhode Island after
sure.
many years of not being, even though the dairy business, as it is up in upstate New York,
mm-hmm.
is collapsing. There are other younger people who are coming in and doing really animal ag, like, you know, to sell good meat into farmers markets and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's
so
exciting what's happening.
Well, it is. I mean, it's nice to hear good news for a change, you know? I mean, really, I've been doing this for a long time now. In fact, Heritage is celebrating its 10th anniversary this
wow.
year. And I've been here since then. Like, I started, I think, in March or April.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's been a great joy and pleasure to me because, frankly, I have wonderful guests like yourself.
Thank
and
you.
I have learned an unbelievable amount about agriculture and policy and you know, just kind
of
like
exciting.
Yeah, I've got one of those, you know, sponge like squirrel in a cage minds that, you know, constantly needs to be fed. And this has really done that for me. So I, you know, speaking of Rhode Island, I wanted to ask if you were aware of other sort of similar initiatives, either through AFT, American Farmland Trust, or through other NGOs that are happening, say in the big, you know, Grain Belt states, for example. I mean, what's going to happen out there? Are those all big agribusinesses now where it's not so much of a succession issue? Or I know that there's going to be about almost 100 million acres turning over in the next 5 or 6 years. I learned that from who was that wonderful woman, Lindsay from
Young Farmers Coalition.
Yeah.
We work alongside them on a lot of these issues. It's a big issue nationally, globally.
Well, as I was saying to you before the show, I was in Spain for a month and I interviewed several activists who are trying to push back on the growth of industrialized hog farming there, which is because Spain has now taken the third place in the EU as the biggest hog exporter in the European Union. So they are now right behind Germany and the Netherlands. Germany and Spain. Not Italy, no.
Surprising.
They don't eat as much pork. I mean, the Spanish are, you have to become a hamanarian to live in Spain. I mean, I'm not kidding you, Samantha. It's like, that is the national food there, is ham. It's Iberian ham in all of its many, many, many permutations, forms, quality levels. I mean, it's just astonishing. I mean, they have we digress. I told you this would happen, but just so you know, they have a chain called the Museo de Jamón. Okay. And there are something like 19 different types of, you know, it looks like prosciutto, right? It's a salt cured, dry cured ham. There's at least 19 varieties. And they range from, you know, just kind of, you know, okay, like pretty, like prosciutto, basically, all the way up to the creme de la creme, which is the black-footed Iberico pig that's fed on acorns. That's called bellota. And that only comes from one particular part of Spain. And it is actually, there is a sweetness to it, which I could not identify. And the guy informed me that it was literally because of the acorns. Mm-hmm. Who knew? Okay, anyway. But that being said, it used to be that they grew, you know, a pig for every human being in Spain, right?
Wow.
But now they have something like tripled their output because they are exporting, especially to the Chinese. They have huge contracts with China. And because the Chinese love Iberico pork, that breed of pig is very good. Well, that breed of pig doesn't survive in confinement. So they now crossbreed it with Duroc pigs, which are much better they can handle confinement and they're much better pig than we use in this country, the big, large white pig, which is, you know, what is it, Landrace in Yorkshire or something like that. It's not that great. Anyway, but that's the ham story there. So that's why I was talking to these activists, because these giant pig farms are springing up around Spain and they bring all of the terrible problems that we have seen in North Carolina, Iowa, and across the country in terms of pollution and environmental issues. But let's go back to this situation in the states, in the various states of the United States.
Oh, yes.
What are people
other?
What are they doing to manage? See, I told you we would digress like that if I don't have an outline.
I could talk about ham all day long. I could talk about pork.
Yes, me too. Unfortunately.
Especially if we're eating it.
Yes. Oh, you know what? Let's take a sponsor drop before we get back into this.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. Matt, are you there? Is he in there?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Let's do our little sponsor drop now, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about sort of national initiatives. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000 square foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history, and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Lisa Held, and I'm the host of The Farm Report here on HRN. The Farm Report is a show about the people, processes, and policies that shape how food is produced today. Expect from-the-field insights as guests explore how producing fresh, delicious food relates to environmental and community sustainability, justice, and better health. You can find The Farm Report wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Okay, well then, let me put my headphones back on and organize myself. This is What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights, if you didn't catch that at the beginning of the show. Although why you would listen to this without knowing that, I don't know. But anyway, it seems professional to say that. And my guest today is Samantha Levy from the American Farmland Trust. We're talking about what the American Farmland Trust is doing in terms of partnering with other NGOs to assure the succession of farmers. Because as their slogan, I think it's your slogan that says, no farmers, no food. Is that you guys?
No farms, no food.
No farms, no food.
It could be no farmers, no food, too.
I mean, definitely.
It's both.
So, you know, just to expand outwards from New York State, where obviously the government is behind this 100% or at least somewhat.
We're working on getting funding again this year.
I bet you are. Well, I mean, you have to. But it sounds like Cuomo has been pretty sympathetic to this.
He's put a lot of energy into farmland protection. That's been really incredible.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
And what about other governors? Are you seeing that in the various regional offices of AFT? Are you seeing the same level of engagement with other state legislators?
Such a timely question.
I'm so glad.
I wish that I had the answer just yet, but I'll plug for a moment that American Farmland Trust is going to be releasing the second stage of our Farms Under Threat report. Oh. So we just put out a report last year basically about the state of farmland loss across the country and found that we lose 3 acres a minute, more than we originally thought.
Oh, my Lord. How did I miss this? I can't believe I didn't have you guys on for that.
Well, I'll be sure to send it to you.
Keep in touch with me. Yeah,
definitely.
We'll organize it.
Yeah, so our second iteration of this research initiative is a state-level policy look down, basically, at you know, how are states doing comparatively on farmland protection. And as I mentioned earlier, farmland protection is really a key element, I think, to this transition to the next generation.
Absolutely.
In terms of other programs to provide the kinds of services that farmers, both, you know, farm seekers and retiring farmers need, or landowners, really, to make their property available to a farmer, I can't think of any other examples that are pairing a land link with, you know, one-on-one, hands-on guidance and support the way that ours is.
Wow.
Though I will say that American Farmland Trust, our national team, has a farmland access curriculum where we're basically training organizations across the United States on how to help farmers access land. And there are land links across the state, though. And I think that Lisa Held was just on plugging her show. She actually wrote an article for Civil Eats recently about land links.
Yes. And yeah.
Wrote a little bit about the Hudson Valley Farm Link Network. So, you know, I would really like to plug this dual hands-on human approach. Of course, it takes funding.
Yeah.
You know, it takes time. It takes staff time. That takes money.
Yeah.
And a lot of these organizations that are working on this are nonprofits.
Right.
And in New York State, we're partnering with a number of nonprofit organizations, land trusts, agricultural organizations, Cornell Cooperative Extension offices, you know, those that really have their finger on the pulse of farming in their communities to bring a new generation onto the land.
Yeah. Well, what would we do without you guys? Let me ask you this. One of the things that I've read, and I've heard this from older farmers who have, for instance, mentored or worked with young farmers, and they find that a lot of young farmers can't really go the distance for a variety of reasons. You know, part of that is land access. Part of it is that you can't get a long enough lease. So that's a big issue. But part of it is also like trying to figure out how to access markets if you're not growing on a big scale.
Sure.
And then, of course, there's the incredibly, brutally hard 365, 24/7 schedule that farmers have to adhere to in order to make their farming successful. And so I'm wondering, like, what do you see, you know, as you guys engage with young farmers who are coming onto land, you know, say in the last 2, 3, 4 years, are you seeing them able to like make a go of it, or do you see land coming back up, you know, to find a new home, or rather a new partner?
Yeah, so I can't speak to any analysis of, you know, kind of farmers that we've matched with land from mm-hmm. our perspective. But, you know, I think that you bring up a lot of good points in that, you know, it's access to land, it's access to capital, it's student debt, it's affordable health care. You know, there are a lot of different pieces to this puzzle that really will make the on-ramp easier for farmers. You know, I've heard Commissioner Ball, the commissioner of the Department of Agriculture and Markets, along with, you know, older farmers, say the barriers that new and young farmers face now mm-hmm. didn't exist when I started.
Wow.
So it is really going to take a lot of work and effort to really help farmers establish themselves, not just in the short term, but to have a successful career in farming.
Yeah.
And I was recently speaking to the land access director at the National Young Farmers Coalition, Holly, and she was talking about Farmland for New Generation as a program that will really help farmers find the right property and secure the right tenure, because they have support from those that can help them negotiate leases, you know, find the right soil types, as I mentioned, all the different elements that will right. make a more successful farm when you get started, somebody who really can bring you clarity.
Yeah.
And
Can they bring you a tractor too?
Maybe.
No, because I mean, that's got to be a huge issue. You know, right there, your farm equipment is hugely costly.
Right. Yeah, so, there's a lot of sharing going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was wondering how farmers manage that, actually, especially somebody who's just getting into the business. I mean, you have to have a minimum capital, you know, purse of at least $150,000 or $200,000 just to get your basic infrastructure in place, right?
Yeah, I think like upfront loans, I don't know as much about the access to capital side,
right.
but certainly that's an important piece of this, an important piece of the puzzle. We focus more on the land piece, being
right.
American Farm Land Trust.
Yeah.
But a lot of our partners work with other funding organizations that have kind of progressive, forward-thinking funding structures to help farmers access the capital that they need to really start up.
Yeah.
And, you know, the state has some programs some loan programs that help farmers with that as well. The state's also investing in some education programs, but, you know, it's a lot of word of mouth. It's a lot of community building. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
what about cooperatives? You know, I mean, there's good ones and there's bad ones. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we know that the big dairy co-op has not served its constituency well. But I know that, for instance, in upstate New York, there's a big beef cooperative that I think has done very well by its farmers. How do you guys interface with those co-ops, or do you encourage the building of those cooperative things so that people can do things like share equipment or borrow a piece of land if they need to grow extra, you know, crop for feed or something like that? Is that part of your program as well?
I wish that I knew more about cooperatives.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I keep asking
it's okay.
You questions like off the, you know, out of left field here. I apologize.
No, please. I mean, I'll share with you what I know and tell you
yeah.
where holes in my knowledge base lie. But, you know, I think that, as I mentioned, you know, maybe this is a good time to talk about farm to institution.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit different than sharing equipment, but, you know, building really viable markets for farmers to sell into. Mm-hmm. There is an aggregation aspect to that.
Yes, I would think so. I mean, what, because obviously one farmer is not going to grow enough, you know, beets for 50,000 students.
Right.
I mean, I'm thinking about, like, for instance, my daughter went to UMass for a while, and they have a great farm-to-table program. And they, I mean, they're serving something like 45,000 meals a day. So they need more than one, two, or three farms.
Yeah, and think about New York City. We're here in New York City. New York City School of Food, that's not their office name anymore, but I can't think of what it is. It's like the Office of Food and Nutrition Services. They serve, you know,
I think it's 800,000 meals a day.
Yeah, and spend
something like that.
You know, millions of dollars. What they usually say is, this is really shocking, that they are the second largest institutional buyer of food in the United States behind the Department of Defense.
Whoa!
Incredible,
no
right?
Way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So we were involved. We coordinate a coalition of all kinds of different organizations. New York City is a part of it, mm-hmm. called New York Grown Food for New York Kids.
Right.
And, you know, the governor last year put forward the No Student Goes Hungry initiative to incentivize K-12 schools to buy more New York grown food.
Right. That's been a long, long battle. We used to have a wonderful program on called Inside School Food with Laura Stanley, who you may have known. She was at the Sylvia Center for a long time, and she did a great job of sort of showcasing the various problems with school purchasing of local products, because, you know, they put out these bids to bids for contracts, mm-hmm. and they don't always put them out to a New York State farmer before, say, for instance, they were used to be buying apples from Washington State, when we have a huge apple industry in New York State. And for some reason that wasn't, you know, now it's changed, but it took activism to make that work.
Yeah. The school food procurement system is not set up to be sensitive to sourcing.
Right.
It's set up to be sensitive to price.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically schools put out their bids and, or they put out a request for bids from vendors or contractors, and they get answered, and they're basically legally required to choose the least expensive, most responsive vendor for the bids that they put out. Now, there have been, as you pointed out, there's been a lot of legal movement. You know, they're able to do geo-preferencing, where they can specify that they're able to go, I don't know, something like 5% over the price of the lowest, if the vendor can, you know, provide documentation that they're sourcing from a certain geographical area, if that's important to the school. But I think that this incentive to basically, what happened was, in last year's budget, the governor and the legislature worked together to put funds in there to incentivize K-12 schools to buy more New York grown food.
Wow.
So if they spend 30% of their lunch budget on food from New York farmers, growers, producers, or processors, they get 4 times the reimbursement from the state per meal.
So that's a real incentive.
Yes. So it's,
because I think it costs like 97 or 98. I mean, only 97 cents of $2.87 or something like that is actually from the food itself. The rest of it is just kind of middlemen. So that's a huge change, sea change in the math that they do to make these programs.
Yeah,
work.
And this reimbursement that the state provides, the per meal reimbursement, the federal government puts in a sizable amount of money, depending on, you know, $2 over, a little over $2 to below $2, depending on what the student is paying for the meal. But the state, their reimbursement has been 5.9 cents prior to this for the last 40 years. So this is the first increase in 40 years, essentially. And
it's just breathtaking.
Yeah. So now it's, if schools spend 30% of their lunch budget on food from New York farms, they get 25 cents per meal.
Yeah.
So it is an incredible incentive.
Yeah.
So building markets for farmers that are maybe a little bit higher value than commodity markets, or, you know, just basically having another outlet for farmers to sell into, they're able to diversify their business.
Right.
And this is another way to keep them viable keep them farming past the 1 to 5 year mark.
Right, right, right. Well, I'm gonna cut us off here so that we don't lose. But Samantha, thank you very much for coming in. And now is your moment to promote American Farmland Trust and what you do. Shamelessly, tell us all about your website, how people can contribute,
that's a great point.
Learn more about what you're doing, you know, all that good stuff.
So, well, I'll say that the Farmland for New Generation New York program, which launched in October, and now we have these regional navigators that have been funded with this $170,000. They're now all across the state. They are ready and willing to help aspiring farmers, retiring farmers, landowners looking for a farmer, you know, pretty much anywhere in New York. So I would suggest visiting nyfarmlandfinder.org to learn more, to find, you know, if you want to post a profile, if you have a farm dream and you're looking for property, if you're a farmer who's ready to retire, I suggest getting in touch with American Farmland Trust or one of the regional navigators that are now listed on the website. I'll also mention, because I didn't get a chance to, that Grow NYC is one of the regional navigators.
Right.
So, you know, there's an organization within New York City, if you're in New York City, but certainly all across the state.
Right. And one more thing I wanted to bring up, which we didn't discuss, but part of this program is your outreach towards immigrants, people of color, refugees, you know, just people who are essentially underserved. And there is part of this program initiative is geared toward that population.
Yeah, I so appreciate you bringing that up.
I thought it was a big deal for
me.
I thought that was a really interesting aspect of the program.
Thank you. So in our application process to become a regional navigator, this was a strong consideration for applicants. If they could demonstrate that they're working with underserved populations. Mm-hmm. Grow NYC is a great example through their Farm Roots program, which is geared towards immigrants and helping immigrants find, you know, set up a successful farm and find land in New York to start, you know, maybe they were farming in the country that they came from.
Right.
And they bring this experience and knowledge. And I'll also highlight Groundswell Center for Food and Farming, which is near Ithaca, New York, in Tompkins County. They're working specifically with people of color, addressing the barriers that people of color specifically face when they're looking to set up a farm. And now they're going to be working on farmland access because they've become a regional navigator, and other Cornell Cooperative Extension offices who are working with indigenous populations, outreach to them and to help them find land to farm. And as you mentioned, helping refugees resettle and find land, because, I mean, what could be more healing than that?
Yeah, no kidding. Absolutely.
And plus, you know, we add to the cultural repertoire, I guess, for lack of a better word, of what we're growing in
Absolutely.
New York, and, you know, then what we're eating as well. And and those people who, you know, maybe came from those countries, then they have the culturally appropriate foods that they, you know, maybe grew up eating. And as you know, food can be much
food
more than just, it's
yes.
there's a lot.
It's our,
it.
It's our unifying, I think Jessica B. Harris said it best. It's the lingua franca of our of the global population. Everyone has to eat, and we all enjoy breaking bread together.
Yeah,
so.
And no farms, no food.
No
so,
farms, no food.
You know, I guess I'll also say that we are a membership organization, so folks can donate to American Farmland Trust if you support
That's right.
our work. To help support our work, our website is farmland.org, and you can find out more information, become a member. You can sign up for action alerts. You'll get emails from me telling you when there are interesting state policies that are coming up. Since I work specifically in New York State, but on things like farmland protection, access, farm to institution, and climate as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, sign up for our emails and we'll keep you up to date on what's going on.
And stay focused on what really matters, which is eating good food.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
Yeah. And I guess the first thing that I would say is when you sit down to eat, just take a moment and thank a farmer. Remember that
this
came from somebody actually putting their hands in the dirt or, you know, raising an animal, and that it's important to just really keep this connection to farms and
and keep them going.
and keep them
support
going.
Support legislation that supports farms. I mean, that's really what the population at large can do best is write to your congressman, write to your local reps, and say, this is what I care about, and this is where I want to see, you know, our state moving forward on programs like this.
Yeah, and particularly now, between January and April in New York State, that's when our budget is negotiated, the state budget. So if you support programs that supports farms in New York State, follow along on Facebook with us. Follow along on our Twitter. We're posting action alerts between January and April about some of the policies that I talked about today and more. So you can keep up to date. We can let you know when it's really important to take action.
Yeah.
And appreciate people being involved.
Absolutely. Samantha, thank you so much for joining me
today. Thank you,
really
Katie.
Great conversation. Yeah. You'll be back.
Absolutely.
You'll be back because we'll talk more about what's going on at the American Farmland Trust. I'd like to do like a regular thing with, you know, reps from all over the country.
Great.
Thanks for listening. Thanks to my sponsor. And thank you, Matt, for engineering. And we'll see you next week with another great show. I promise. See you then. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.